Let's go down to the Urban Homestead, Pasadena by the freeway. Right down there on the Urban Homestead, Jules and his family are working away. Come on down to the farm in the city, back to the future, back to the plan. Right down there on the Urban Homestead, loving the life back into the land.
Oh, ooh, help the garden grow.
Singing,
oh, ooh,
we've got to help the garden grow.
Welcome to the Urban Homestead Radio. We are your hosts, Anise,
Justin,
Jordan.
So when we finally got around to it, we roofed the house. We did it ourselves. So we were up there. Jordy was up there, there on the ladder with the hammer and the thing, and we took off the old roof and the tarp.
Splinters.
Yeah. So and then somebody came in and put the metal roof on it. But we put a 50 sheets of plywood up there with the hammer and the thing and put it up.
There's a photograph of Justin completely black because they roofed. They put layer of asphalt sheet.
The original wood cedar shake, original cedar shake was on the house.
But they just kept layering asphalt.
And then the shake leaked, so somebody decided to put an asphalt shingle.
It's like
that leaked, so they put another row of shingles on top. And then they decided to put another row of shingles.
So the roof
starts
sagging.
So they started sagging on this side. There was three layers of asphalt shingles and the original
Justin
wood shake.
Justin took it off by hand, and he would just come down like.
And so you start at the top, and then you just knock everything down, and it just was like...
What's the pitch of the roof?
It was an 812, so yeah. It was
It's pretty scary. Being up there, you know, you're kind of bracing yourself, you're like hanging off things. But we did it. Dad, me, and Justin, mostly.
So we did that. Got up there and took it all down. And then we had about 50 sheets of plywood. Hauled those sheets of plywood up, put them in. And then somebody came in and did the metal roofing, but
because it's a special bending machine.
It was a project, you know. So we tried to knock off a project here. We did gray water, we did biodiesel, we did solar, and like I said, it's easily to get overwhelmed because it's like, hey, how's that? Oh, 1 year was a cob oven, 1 year was things, well, 1 year was hootenanny.
Well, to riff off of what Justin said about doing the work yourself, a couple years ago, Dad won an award from the city of Pasadena for. Restoring an old home,
historic
preservation of a house in Pasadena. Somebody nominated him, we won, and Dad's just like, okay, all right. So he goes get the award, right? And we're sitting there, yeah, 1 of 4, because there was all these other people in different categories. So Annie, myself, and Dad were sitting in the audience and watching all these presentations. So guy goes up and with his like fancy house, and you know,
green
they did
green,
great job,
green and green.
And we imported the tile from this, and you know,
here's
Ethiopia sand and all that, you know, and here's my contractor, here's my thing, and
here's
there's like
architect.
This team architects, and they all go up there and they receive the award. So Dad gets up there, he does, he's like, well, we did it ourselves. And he gets me and he's up there and goes, this is my team. Architect, construction worker, and everybody just like looking at, you know, Justin wasn't there at the time, but he was like my son and my two daughters, they did
he thought it was just, you know, get up and do the work, but
they had to give all to all the architects,
you have to
and stuff.
Top, you know, your team of people that
you had
helped
to give credit to all the team of people, and Dad's
to restore
like, my son,
his thing.
My
and then like and then what was the joke? It says it has the original wiring.
Yeah.
Electrical wiring from 19 whatever.
19.
Or
well, whatever.
Plumbing or what was it? I don't know. It was some sort of electrical.
Yeah,
it's
but
like
see,
original.
Even though they don't realize, they want to buy, and we notice that when people come in, they want to buy it. They're like, how do I get this? Like, where do I sign? How do I buy it? And we're just like, I don't think you can. You can't buy it. You cannot buy it. And a lot of people, there is some, based off of our success, some businesses would pop up. You know, well, come pay me and I'll make you an urban homestead. And then, but you have to know the lay of your land. You have to know the sun. You have to know the soil. You can't just buy it and plop it on without actually studying it. So we We study this place for 30 years. We know the corners. We know where it doesn't drain. We know where it's drier. That's why it's because we know it. We have our hands there. We've done it. We didn't pay a team to come in and just say, let's see, where does a peach tree? Okay, here. It doesn't grow there. You know? We know where it grows. We know the cold patches.
We've had to redo and redo.
Well, because it gets cold in certain areas of the yard. Like, rest of it doesn't freeze. It freezes there. It's like, okay, don't put that there anymore.
Well, what's the annual, every 2-3 years, a ritual of just re-landscaping the front?
Something that worked too well.
Yeah, now it's
actually
too big.
Actually, something that could work too well,
mm-hmm.
that would take over,
mm-hmm.
so we have to take that out. It's like, oh, no, you don't take things out because it failed. You take things out because it grew too big.
Mm-hmm.
And it would take over the whole yard if you let it grow.
Yeah, and unfortunately, with such a small plot, you have to maintain it meticulously because things can get out of hand. So where if you had,
an acre,
you could just have your garden, draw out the middle and say, okay, we're going to put the garden right in the middle. And no trees and no neighbor's trees
and
no shadows from the neighbor's yard and things like that. So it's a little bit easier. And here it's like, oh, yeah, that's not, oh, I forgot about that. Or
You could say the sun angles when the sun
mm-hmm,
changes,
mm-hmm.
the solstice comes in.
Mm-hmm.
Everything changes.
Just like, oh, it's not the same place.
The school put the trees in and now they're 10, 12 years worth of tree growth.
We had to rechange our landscape
because of their tree growth. See, so.
Yeah.
But we're always changing, we're always adjusting. And like Justin said, things, we notice changes in the environment that most people won't know.
Mm-hmm.
He knows like maybe the sun's just different.
Mm-hmm.
Or it seems hotter.
Or bugs are out earlier.
Yeah,
Justin was like,
hey, something strange.
Mm-hmm.
Climate change or
mm-hmm.
Things we said used to be pretty reliable. Nature is always unpredictable, but
mm-hmm.
it used to be, June bugs would come out in June.
Mm-hmm.
June bugs would come out June. We have June gloom in June.
Mm-hmm.
We have May gray. We have shout rain in the winter. And then things started changing
mm-hmm.
where we couldn't get things growing when they were supposed to be growing. Then we knew something was up. It didn't make any sense. Like, something was off. And that's
where
it
shouldn't be that hard to grow
a tomato. Just the way things feel, the air sometimes feels different. And it's just...
And we've talked to other people that have been growing tomatoes.
50 years.
They're 80 years old, they've been growing tomatoes. They just stopped. It was too hard. Something changed. Is it easier? There's easier now than it was before? Some ways, yes. Some ways, no. The
mm-hmm.
environment has changed, the pests have changed, the climate has changed, and like I said, it's been at least five or six years we've had a decent rainfall, and this
mm-hmm.
year finally got us back to where, hey, there's some normalcy in the rainfall.
Because
it was just, you could water all day and all night, and it wouldn't make that much difference as one rainfall, boom, everything grows overnight.
Mm-hmm.
And when it started changing, we're like, what's going on? Why can't we get tomatoes? We used to get tomatoes. And we talked to other farmers, and I was like, what's going on? It's got a crop failure. Something's wrong. And then they started thinking, oh, climate change, or things are happening. And it was
global,
like,
weirding, yeah. You call it.
No matter, sometimes it's like, no matter what you did, like 1 year, eggplant refused to grow.
Yeah.
Didn't matter. We grow eggplant just great. 1 year, eggplant did
and
not grow.
Yeah, because in the past 2 years,
and
you got
one,
eggplant
yeah, one,
taller than
no,
you.
It was 1 year we had...
9-foot
eggplant.
We could
not grow zucchini. I mean, it just was
zucchini
1 year.
Zucchini
like,
could not grow. It was like, and we were like, hey, is anybody... They're like,
it
yeah,
was
zucchini
it was
grow.
Almost embarrassing until somebody came to the farm stand and said,
everything
I'm having issues with my zucchini. It's like, you too? It's like, hey, good. Didn't make you feel so weird, because like,
zucchini is a weed.
You should be able to grow zucchini.
You
know, that's the thing. And it was just getting harder and harder. And then we've had imported pests
mm-hmm.
that we never had before.
Yeah, we lost two big grapes last year.
We had diseases, Pierce disease. We've
mm-hmm.
had...
Bagrata bug. Which Justin wants to die a fiery death on
the stuff
things.
We start when we grew started, there's new bugs that we've never dealt with before that
mm-hmm.
can't be killed organically. So we don't spray anything. We don't spray organically. As like a last resort. We have spider mites that are brutal. We lost... a couple years worth of tomatoes. They're just brutal.
Yeah, Dad, just, you know, at some point, you just call it a loss, and you just kill the plant. And so Justin used to grow these brassicas.
You could grow kale year round.
Except they imported this. Is it Sudan?
It's Africa.
It's an African bug called Bagrata bug, and it generally sucks the life out of any brassica.
We call it the vampire bug.
And so Justin, at some point, in like June, he just kills all the brassica. He's just like, that's it. I'm not gonna grow. Because he doesn't even try.
Because you would harbor this bug.
Habitat.
Yeah, so he just kills all the brassicas in June. No matter, we used to grow them year round.
We used to be able to grow kale, mustards, and arugula year round. And past...
He just doesn't even try.
5-6 years. Nope. Nothing organically kills it.
Actually, they can only burn. And big farms, they burn them.
Chemical stuff get it. They vacuum it or they...
Flamethrower
is not a bad idea, but
Justin, he's like,
because our livelihood was salad mix, and the salad mix we originally grew year round. So when it came around, it's like, what these bugs are coming in from? And we basically have to be out of the salad business for about 2 or 3 months out of the year.
You just give up.
It's not
worth it.
Organically, naturally, there's nothing you can do.
I mean, literally, the bed looks beautiful,
and then it's dead.
And then overnight, you look at it and look like somebody burnt all the edges.
It's a vampire bug. It sucks.
It just sucked the juice out of it.
And the little tiny little things.
The babies are really bad. But so we just stopped. Adapt or die. Yeah. We stopped growing brassicas for about 2-3 months out of the year. Lettuce is fine, but the brassicas, all the mustards and all that stuff.
And Dad learned that a long time ago. He would try to do things. He would try to get things. And he would try and try to get things to work at times that he thought he could. And then at some point, he says, let nature be nature. And you just go with it. You just adjust. And unfortunately, we're adjusting with imported bugs, which, we shouldn't be in this area, but we are.
Yeah, I mean, they have imported Argentine ants. That changes the climate.
Sharpshooters.
Grata bugs.
The greening disease that's in citrus.
One of the stories goes about blueberries was, you know, everybody likes berries, so we said, well, do grow blueberries. So we had one side of the yard in front, bought a bunch of blueberries, grew them on this side of the yard. No matter what we did, they turned yellow and whatever. So they didn't grow. So I said, how about this side? So they grew great on about 6 feet over the other side. They grew great for things. So we got it until the drought hit us, and then all the blueberries. It just wasn't profitable to even continue watering.
But it was great. They grew very, very well. We'd have tons of
blueberries. Just moved from one side of the yard to the other side of the yard. It worked. And then it did. So with the drought, I lost a couple $100 with the blueberries. It just wasn't profitable. You watered all day and all night. Just too hot, too dry.
So we let a lot of parts of the garden, especially in the front yard, because that was edible landscaping, we let them just fallow out because it wasn't worth it. We concentrated on the raised beds.
Laid low until things settled out. So,
but we had a lot of volunteers that come back every year. So the rain would bring them up, and then they would grow, and then they would die. And they said, how do you do that? Well, it just came up. I said, how do you plant that? It just grew there. They can point out the bug, walk you through the whole yard and say, what we actually planted and what's growing by itself.
Dad says, if it grew there, let it grow. That's what you'd say.
This year with the rain brings back a lot of stuff that hasn't grown in a lot of time. Mm-hmm. So it's very nice to see that. But it's been years since we were able to.
And that intense green, spring green, we haven't seen that in a long time.
Everything just felt so dried out. Mm-hmm. But as I mentioned, we used to give tours, and Dad, he would joke because he had it beautifully landscaped, but because, like, to just riff off what Justin said, he would always move things until he found the perfect place. So one of Dad's tricks was to bury the plant with this pot in the ground. He would never actually plant the plant until he was happy that it was going to grow there. So he'd take the pot, dig it, put it in the ground,
see how it goes.
You know, march over it and see how it goes. And he'd watch it.
Like a 5 gallon pot, not like a 1 gallon pot.
Yeah, a 5 gallon pot. Mm-hmm. He'd watch it and say, is that going to work there? And then it was like, if he sees it not working there, he'd dig it up, move it. So that's how he experimented. He'd sink a pot in the ground and watch it for maybe half a year. And he moved. He called it like his little movable landscape. He'd move until he found that's going to work there. And then he'd plant it in there.
Permanently.
So a lot of people, they would tour, and some of the stuff was just planted as he watched it. And that's what, going back to what people said about what I said about people trying to buy the landscaping. Dad spent a lot of time absorbing and just seeing and watching. And a lot of people don't want to spend that time.
Trial and error.
Yeah, he would say trial and error. He would say, I'm not going to throw in the trowel.
Yeah.
He goes, I'm not going to throw in the trowel. I'm going to keep going on it.
Play on words.
And he loved the trowel.
Yeah. And like you said in the film, Homegrown Revolution, you know, he planted every square inch, a driveway. He would joke when people were here. He said, oh, yeah, if you stay long. I think he said that at the Hoot a couple times, too.
We'll
plant something on you and use you as trellis, you know, because...
He loved trellising. Everything. He was always going vertical because he couldn't have much trees.
Layers and, you know, just something that, you know, he wanted to use all space. So, you know, vertical space and the middle space and then somewhat middle ground space level. And ground level and then low growing. So it was just like using the space like that. He liked that. When it worked, it was nice.
Well, this Hoot Nanny space was cleared out very reluctantly. There was plants all around. But then as the more people came, he started pushing the plants to the side. And then it kind of started getting more to the edges. But there was plants. Like, you couldn't even walk around here.
The kitchen bed kind of swung
out. Yeah, this bed swung out here. But as the people kept tripping over it and the people started coming, he was like, okay, I guess I got to make it square.
Yeah.
And I got to put the plants to the side. And
the
Hoot Nanny changed the layout of the yard a little bit.
The same thing happened, they said, organically with the Hoot Nanny. It said, started in the front yard.
Yeah.
So how do you plan this? It just happened.
It just happened. It just grows.
Literally, it wasn't planned, wasn't scripted, it was a thing. And 4 years later, what you saw, the Hoot Nanny, is not how it started 4 years ago in the front yard, or 5 years ago in the front yard. It was a spin-off on what we did with the yard.
It's organic.
It happened. It was, you go with it organically, yeah. And if it works, then it worked for 4 years.
Yeah, so. We say we're not, you know, it's just, the homestead is just, and this is not just about growing food. It's growing community, too. So. You know, the front porch farm stand was like our interface with the community. People could come in and you got to, you know, talk to the people that ate your food and, you know, or how to use this and things like that. And then people would come and then some never left. So,
well, as Justin said, we sold to the restaurants and caterers first.
Yeah.
And then with the .com bust, we went from flowers to veggies, but we still sold to restaurants. But then with the market, the market crashed in
2008, 2009. Yeah, another downfall.
Yeah, there was another recession. So the restaurants, they look at the bottom line, they say, you're the specialty produce, we want cheaper.
Price
and they cut us. So we were finding that we went direct to the consumer then. And that's when the farm stand opened and we opened up to the people and said, you want produce? And we adjusted even with the economic changes because we just went directly to the restaurants. And then with the, I think it was 2006 or something, yeah. There was some sort of market shift.
They were cutting costs.
Yeah.
And that since ours was so expensive,
they cut us. Yeah. And then we went to the direct.
You just have to have a lot of...
Flexibility.
You have to have a lot of options. You can't be just putting, like they say, all your eggs in one basket, especially with homesteading if you relied on for your income. So you have to have backup because, you know, it could be a bad year. So if it is a bad year, what's your fallback plan? What's plan B? What's something that can give you income even though, you know, maybe that crop doesn't grow? So it's secondary, it's skills, it's doing without, making do. Yeah, it's just going with everything and just learning to adapt and figuring out. And you know, we're learning as we go. I mean, literally, it's like a circus sometimes. You feel like you're in a circus. There's like rings and shows and you're juggling. And, you feel like,
and then
oh,
people
you
come
know?
And say, what do you do?
Well, yeah, what do you do all
and
day?
I sat there and looked at them and go, where do I begin?
As homesteaders, you wear many hats. You wake up and you're caretaker of the animals. Then you could be a vet. Then you're a gardener. Then you're a canner. Then you're, you know, market manager or
handyman
and
social media.
Answering phones, secretary.
Accountant. Yeah.
Vet. Customer service.
Somebody calls up. Oh, Jordy, my
customer
chicken.
Customer service.
Mm-hmm. So many hats. And
so many people, what do you do on the homestead? I just kind of look at, I don't know, where can I start? What did I do today?
Oh, you're a cook, you're a baker, possibly even a candlestick maker sometimes. So.
It's funny looking back.
It's a circus out there.
It's funny looking back. We had some rough times there.
As I said, it's rough. Yeah. It's not
for the faint of heart.
No, and like I said, you know.
And then other people were saying, why does your place look so good? That's like, he's not stupid. He doesn't take a picture of the stuff that doesn't work. I mean, it's just...
We thought about having it on the blog. We thought about having
the good, bad, the ugly. Well, yeah. We don't take a picture of the stuff that doesn't work. I mean, they're not that... I mean, it's not that... Not that stupid, but, you know, to take a picture of things. So then when people are like, why does your place look so good all the time? So, well, we just don't take the pictures of the bad stuff.
We thought about the good, bad, and the ugly side.
Yeah, just post what happens in real life. I mean, just don't, no Photoshop, nothing.
We don't know Photoshop.
What I'm saying is like,
straight out of camera.
Pictures lie though.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can take pictures a certain way and it looks different. Mm-hmm. So, and then people are shocked at how small it is. Mm-hmm. Cause pictures can, if you take a wide angle length, it changes the whole perspective. Then when Google Maps came in and the satellite thing, you can actually see how small the place is.
You could probably, there's you in the yard or somebody.
We've had people show up here, like media or something, they have like big boots on.
They think they're going to
a
farm. And
like bug spray and hat on, they'll come in and they come and they're like ready to check the back 40 and they walk back and they're just like,
this is it?
It's like, yeah, that's sorry.
And they actually would walk out the measure of the front yard, like we said it's 66 feet or 132. You don't know what it is. That's just a number. So once they see it, it's like, wow, that's small. You know. And then with Google Maps, people all over the world, just pull us up on the back. You can see the whole thing. How tiny we are in the grand scheme of things, the freeway, the school. Mm-hmm. You pull it up like that. It's amazing every time I look at it. It's like...
That's our place?
Yeah, because you're so locked in, you know, in one dimension. So we do the Google Maps, and you could see the whole layout. And it's just like, it doesn't lie. I mean, you can't make this stuff up. I mean, you could take pictures, but you see the whole layout. Mm-hmm. And people were actually studying it, and we posted something online, and then somebody would measure the picture online. Mm-hmm. We had one guy met out in Corona, and met Dad at Smith and Hawkins thing. Mm-hmm. He would literally, every picture we put online,
take an equivalency in the photo.
So there would be like a 5-gallon bucket or a thing he knew the measurement of a chair.
And then he would do in the photograph.
And he'd measure that. And then
the layout of the beds.
Then measure the bed and says your beds are 3x3x6. So then he'd make 3x8. And then he gave us
a picture of his yard, and I looked at it and I went,
looks like our yard.
Wait, is this ours?
He actually copied it from pictures
the layout. I mean, I'm looking at it and I just sat there for a minute.
That looks like our yard.
Wait, no, it's not really, but what?
He literally he measured the pictures and did things, and his backyard was just, he had to do a double take. That's how close he copied. I mean, he was like.
He copied the measurements from the photos.
And then, like I said, living here, you know, you get, you know, you don't sometimes appreciate, you know, like people say, you don't appreciate where you are, and you don't sense what other people are sensing or feeling, what other people are feeling. So feedback we've gotten from this place is we had a gentleman who couldn't see. And
he was sight impaired.
He's sight impaired. And he said he literally, from just walking just in the neighbors. And he was driving with a friend.
He said it's right here.
He could smell. And I always thought, I said, that'd be kind of cool, especially with like JPL and Caltech. I said, you know, I wonder if they would do like a measurement, like what it measures at the homestead air quality, and then, you know, walk just a couple feet in the street and measure it. And just, I just would like to, just for curiosity's sake, because people always say, oh, your place smells better. The air's cleaner here. You know, of course it's the plants. Duh. But I'm just like scientific evidence. Yes, we are, you know, our property is, you know, 40% cleaner than the air out in Orange Grove, or, you know, just like have a thing. Yeah, I thought that would be kind of cool.
It's after about four or five people tell you that.
Yeah, really?
You know, you start looking, you know, you say, okay, one guy.
Yeah, no, like lots
he's making
of people,
it up or whatever. And then he said somebody else said it.
Yeah, many people have said it.
I think he said, some people said it smells different. Mm-hmm. He said it smells like home or something. Mm-hmm, I think it was some article.
A lot of comments.
Yeah, a lot of comments. Like, oh, this place smells different or feels different. There's things you're like, when you grow up here, it's kind of hard, you know. We know when you leave, but when you come, you know, for new people, it's so,
speaking of copters, we always found it humorous. Every once in a while, they would go over our house. And then you kind of see them, they're going to the house, then they kind of like mid-air break. And they come around. And they just kind of circle around. You can see them checking it out. And they're like, cool. And then they go funny. And it happened several times. So these copters, they're just kind of like, and then they're like,
ooh, what's down there? Like,
that was the one. They said I was out watering and Dad was in the backyard.
And he just like froze.
No, just basically buzzed the place.
He buzzed the place. He's like looking at us and Dad
was like, no, he was going, I don't know.
He was going and he's just like, whatever.
It just, you're sitting where I'm sitting watering.
Yeah, he was checking out what you were growing. Dad was like,
yeah, Dad went like this to him. And I was like, like that, and he was just checking out. He's looking at the yard.
Shot. Every, all the yards look the same.
Yeah, they're going along.
Like a break, like
mid-air break, and he banked it. And I remember going, and Dad, I remember him like looking,
the wind
going
was
like
picking
this
up, and I was like, "What's going on?" Because usually the helicopters mean police activity, you know. That's the neighborhood.
Yeah, he was just checking
out. And he just stopped, and Dad was like, and I was out front. I was like, "What's that guy want?" And then
Dad was like, "He just looked at the place," and it's happened. I've noticed it several times, and there was one time. One of them kind of rose over the freeway and kind of hovered right there. Dad's just looking at it. He's like, are we getting raided? You know, he's just like, and the guy went like that and just kept going.
I think the joke was they turned left at the blue
plant. Yeah, yeah.
The roof, but.
Or the ones with all the plants in the backyard.
Because yeah. Even on Google Maps, you'd see the blue tarp. Yeah. It was easy. You put for the whole yard and there it is. Big old
not
blue
anymore.
Tarp.
They've updated it.
Yeah, so every couple of years they would update it, but when they pulled up the first Google map, you could see the date of it because it had the blue tarp on the hole.
We were also one of the few early adopters in Pasadena solar panels. So there's the shiny solar panels and then all this.
And then the blue tarp.
So it kind of attracted attention from copters. It was pretty funny. I remember that quite often.
Yeah, it's weird.
I remember there was one time, because we do biodiesel, and everybody's like, one time there was like, the cops came to the door and Justin's like, okay, and he's like, yeah, you guys do the biodiesel in the backyard? Justin's like,
yeah.
Yes, he's like, can we see? And Justin's like, oh, they're gonna think it's something bad.
Meth lab.
A meth lab. So he let him in the back, and they thought it was so cool. We're just like, yeah, they probably don't think this is biodiesel. They thought it was so cool.
I blocked that one out.
It was.
You did. You were just kind of getting, I saw you petrified. Like, do I show them?
Fire department or something?
No,
no. It was a policeman. They're like, hey, you guys.
They read us. They saw us on CNN or whatever.
They read us on the paper and they stopped these two.
KCAL 9.
Okay, KCAL 9.
Yeah, this cop. They wanted to come and just let them the backyard and showed them this biodiesel reactor, which is like tubes
and aluminum foil. And
Justin's sitting there going, I think they just checked it out to see. But they were honestly generally interested. They thought it was the coolest thing, but you could just see Justin's face like, how am I going to explain this?
Methanol.
Not meth. Methanol.
I think they make meth out of methanol.
Yeah, no.
That didn't go really
well. I remember your face. It was pretty funny. You were just like, sure. The policeman.
Yeah. Well, it is, yeah.
And then, yeah, because then we have the biodiesel cars and we'd ride around. And after it's been on the media, Dad would be driving and then people stop stupid. Hey, man! Rock on! Dad, like, keep going. They'd yell at him at the streets.
Yeah,
because he was riding this big
black.
It's a
small town. Pasadena is a small town.
Suburban.
Yeah. And people know who you are. So.
Well, I think we got away, I don't know if they got away with it, but there was a lot of, Pasadena was, helped us out a lot.
No, Pasadena wasn't. People say, how, another thing, that's, God, Justin brought that up. People say, how do you do this? You know, my city, this is not, Pasadena has been amazing. Just, they're on the forefront of the sustainable movement. They had like a 20 goal plan for making Pasadena more sustainable. More green. So we're just like, cool, because
we were the only home on the green building tour of 2007.
Oh yeah, Pasadena. So you know, when we call them, hey, you know, can we put a metal roof on our house? They're like, I guess so. Never, because you know, code. They're like, bring in a sample. We just don't want it shiny, so you know, to blind the neighbors. So we brought it in. They never saw like the roof that we had that's metal, but it's in. So we were actually educating them. Yeah. And, you know, and they were learning from us, and then they drew, you know, they were using it to help the city become more sustainable and more green. So in a sense, I mean, it's been a blessing to just even live in Pasadena, because it's just been an amazing city. And
we were there with
we got two awards from the city and the mayor.
Two awards from the city.
Mike, Mike and Mauricio, all the city. Oh, and Alice Sterling and Carol. Yeah, all and the mayors. The wow. So.
He said, "What did he say? Dad was his best advertiser."
Yeah, Dad was the best guy because you know, like I said,
tried all the rebates.
Tried all the rebates. Put in the solar panels. Got
every green
everything.
Program.
Yeah, we would go to every Earth Day that Pasadena had. So, and it was like I said, great to even like live in a city that appreciated what you're doing. It wasn't fighting against, you know, and that was pretty.
They really
pretty
appreciated
nice.
Dad pushing them,
mm-hmm.
the envelope, because they didn't know quite how to deal with the
residential aspect.
So Dad would often have us call and say, "Hey, do you guys, you know, offer this and this?" And they're like, "No.
What about gray water?
Oh, what about gray water? What's your policy for gray water?" And like, "We don't have a policy."
Mm-hmm.
We should talk about that. And so they liked, because Dad was like trying to push. He wanted to make this sustainable.
And he didn't want to go against code.
He wanted to work with the city.
He wanted
to,
you know, not be like, you know, behind.
So I remember calling for gray water one time. I'm like, "What's the policy?" And they're like, "We actually haven't written that. Do you want to come and talk about it?"
Mm-hmm.
And so what do you know? And they thanked Dad for that, for actually pushing Pasadena into things they didn't think about, like even to the point of maybe even like adopting some sort of composting toilets. They, you know, they consider how to actually deal with, you know,
residential
green.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's also about perspective, because I think there's some proverb or something, you know, you teach somebody how to, you can feed a guy or teach him how to fish kind of thing. And I think what Dad saw was the bigger picture, and it was sometimes we get locked into the day-to-day things, and you know, and Dad was going to see in a big picture. So if you say, "What are you doing?" You know, maybe, "Well, I'm planting a garden," and what Dad would see it as, he was changing the world. It's all it's your perspective on what you're doing. Anything, any artist, anything you say. Well, it's, if you just say planting a seed, that is actually what you're doing. But it's your view or your perception or what you want to do with that, what you're planting a seed. So yeah. That was Dad's gift, and he thought he could change the world.
Yeah, so it's funny. He came out here to go to theology college to become a minister, and the minister became... Earth Care Ministry, like being good stewards, tending to the garden.
Back to the garden.
So, in a sense, the ministry was you know, from the trowel and from the seeds and from the hard work, from your two hands and getting your daily bread.
Yeah. So it was, the original thing was out here to go to theology,
mm-hmm.
get a degree and become a minister or something. That didn't work out, but he ended up
ministering another way.
Mm-hmm. The original thing was man in a garden,
mm-hmm.
man and woman in a garden,
mm-hmm.
and so
and with animals,
yeah, right?
And to be good stewards of creation
and be decent people,
yeah.
Hmm?
Be a good neighbor,
be a good neighbor.
And speaking of good neighbors, another thing, when Dad would give presentations, you know, he'd give a PowerPoint presentation, and he would say, another thought that was in the back of his mind, because you can have a chicken coop and you can have a garden and you can have things, but it was all, but we lived in the city. We had neighbors. We saw our neighbors, they saw us. And so one of the things that Dad kept focused on being a good citizen of Pasadena was, would I want to live next to me? Because people say, "Wow, you know, I didn't think, you know, you could have a garden in your front yard." Well, call it edible landscaping, make it beautiful. Nobody can object to that. But if you, you know, do it not planning wise or whatever, and then your neighbors might not like it so much. So you have to have in the back of your mind, like, I am in the city, I do have neighbors, and would I want to live next to myself? So we made a conscious choice, like I said, to keep the animal, to keep everything clean and presentable and tidy, and that, you know, and
I think the joke is the Beverly Hills.
We're the Beverly Hillbillies?
No, the coop.
Oh, the coop. Oh, yeah.
We are the Beverly Hillbillies, though.
Jordy's Ellie May. Well,
the chicken.
You're strong,
in,
but
he's granny.
Yeah. I'm granny in the kitchen. Whipping
but
up.
The one, you know, the
Vittles.
Front yard. The front yard was also landscape. It wasn't just edible landscaping, you know, edible plants. It was landscape. So Dad made sure, you know, it looked good, tasted good, but you know, you can, you know, sometimes it did look bad, but we tried to make it.
Yeah. Small was beautiful, and it was productive, so pretty and practical, we always say.
Yeah, looking back, it's like you said, you know, where he came from. It's just like, how he got this far, it's just incredible. He'd be here for hours just talking about.
Well, we still don't believe it. I mean, no, not still believe it. Like, it shocks or humbles, I don't know, is this word. It's like the massive outreach. You know, when we went to India with our film Homegrown Revolution, people would come up, I read your blog. We're just like, wow, really? You know? Wow, you know, it's like, really? You know, and then they would tell us.
They have to tell the history of
the history film. But no, they would tell us, oh, I read this, and I was like, wow, you guys know more about me than I do, because I would totally forget.
I totally forgot that happened.
I was like, really? They tell us
the
story.
There was one time
like,
we were in the city of Udaipur in India, and so the city of Udaipur, the community center, put on a presentation. The dad, the film, and dad doing a presentation. So we're there, right? They say, no, we approached by this couple. American couple, and they were just like, we finally meet you here, and we're traveling through India.
They're huge friends of yours.
Georgia.
Yeah, they were like from Virginia that we met in Udaipur, and it was in India. And
like,
they were big
travel?
Followers of us. They had to travel all across the world, and we met in Udaipur. It was just so weird. They were just so excited to finally meet us. And we were in the middle of India.
Yeah, so speaking of the film, so what happened was Homegrown Revolution, how it started was, Dad was asked by Peter Sellers of UCLA to, Michael Pollan was going to be guest speaking, and he wanted Dad to be the local representative of the sustainable food movement. So Dad was like, well, it's going to be at 6:30 at night, and a bunch of 400 college students are going to be probably bored out of their brains. So he turned to Jordan and said, hey, whip me up a little video thing so I can show.
Like, I know these college kids, they need things that sing and dance.
Yeah, sing and dance. So he's like, so she made this thing 3 days. She put together, music in it.
Media clips.
News clips
and kind of just hodgepodge.
And music.
The kids loved it. And then we said, oh, we'll do it. Jordy's like, well, we'll put it on YouTube. So it was there for a couple months, and then we get a call or email from Patagonia's Wild and Scenic Film Festival up in Grass Valley, and they're like, we'd like to show your film. Like, we're like, what film?
They're like, your film. I'm like, it's not a film.
It's like a short.
I think I argued with them on the phone. I'm like, you don't want it.
We really want it.
And then so I said, okay, it's got a lot of copyright material on it. So I begged out. I try to beg out that way. I'm like, I don't. And they're like, well, can you reshoot it? I'm like, so we reshot it. And it pretty much recreated it.
Yeah.
And,
so it brought people to their feet.
To tears.
I mean, literally, people would come up and they'd be crying.
So that film went to, I would say, 60 film festivals, won over a dozen awards.
At least.
And the clip for Earth Day, Oprah's Earth Day 2009, I believe she showed a piece of that.
And it brought us to Greece, India,
New Zealand.
In Italy.
Mm-hmm. We could have gone more places.
Slovakia wanted us to come in, and Russia wanted to come in.
South Sea Wales wanted us to come in.
Go
South America, too.
South America asked us to come in.
Yeah. So that's a thing. It was
the little film that could.
It happened organically, too. Just like they said, well, we were filmmakers. No.
It was a homegrown film.
Some people go to school to become a filmmaker. Dad just wanted to show a college class what we did. And make it catchy, put some music to it, and
short
make sure
and
they stay awake during the whole.
It was a night class.
He's
like, I'm gonna keep them awake.
Thing, and it, the reaction it got, because we were in the back row, you know, it's just like, you think, you know, because we knew we were different, we knew we were odd, and then it got a rousing response. It was like, wow, you know, because you put promo for. Dad was doing presentations.
Dad was doing presentations. You get a little tired of saying it over and over again.
Just
drone
and
drone. And I turned over my lawn. Well, what? What did it look like? Mm-hmm. So he could do a PowerPoint, or we did a film.
And that story made it tell a story. Mm-hmm. And then I do remember the
reaction.
The reaction to the trowel in the air. Mm-hmm. He shot it right here. He sat on the driveway. Jordy was here.
And I filmed him putting his
And you could see the telephone pole right there in the film. And I was like, what is he doing?
And I'm like, filming, and he's like,
he's He's got his trowel that he uses all the time. So Dad goes out. I was like, what are you doing? So he did so many different, I don't know how many takes it was.
There's quite a few.
Quite a few takes, so he would put the trowel, if he'd watched the
film. Did you have to hit in the frame? Because I would hold the frame and he'd have to hit it into the
frame. So Jordy would sit there and then shot right there. You could see the telephone pole from the original clip. And it just like, the simple thing, putting a fist in the trowel in the air, just got a rousing response. People, some people were crying, some people were cheering.
Mm-hmm.
It was just like, here he was shot right there in several different takes. It was just like, first of all, I didn't know what Dad was doing, but Dad had ideas for the thing. So then the trowel went around, so then we had to play on words and put it on a t-shirt and do it like that.
Vectorize Dad's hand into a logo.
So it was just funny, because you say, well, never intended to be a filmmaker, never intended to do this or Hootenannies or whatever, but it all happened organically. So it wasn't, we never intended to be filmmakers, but it happened organically.
Mm-hmm.
And Dad had a good eye for that.
That's pretty funny.
But
Jordy just got a text.
I know, I got a text from a friend asking a question.
Jordy's like, oh, I didn't know we were the Homestead Help hotline.
Yeah, she had friends. She goes, what do I do with this? And I wrote it back, and she goes, thanks. This is your yearly subscription for 101 Homestead Help hotline. She says, great. I was just answering a friend's question right there. She's asking me what to do with biochar, you know, stuff.
It was funny, but the filmmaking circuit, we didn't fit in either, because it's like,
we didn't film, yeah.
No, we didn't fit in, because it's
no, because they were filmmakers. They were, they actually went to school.
They got a degree.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not went to school. I mean, they went to filmmaking school.
They were filmmakers. We was just farmers. We went to film.
So it's funny because we didn't fit in there. It's like, oh, it took.
They're like,
5 years.
So what was your last film? Dad's like,
what's your next?
What's
film?
Your next film? Dad's like.
It's funny because he's sitting there like,
what's your, yeah, what's
5 years and $100,000 it took me to make this film, like 5 minutes, 15 minutes.
Sitting there on a computer like, I don't know what I'm doing, but let me put this here. Oh, there, that worked. Woohoo! You know, I think I had so many cuts and wipeouts. I mean, that was pretty brutal to learn video editing on the fly.
It was funny because he said, what film?
Yeah, we were just saying,
what film? So.
And, yeah, we just want to, I mean, like I said, this is, you know.
This is our
also,
story.
Yeah, this is our story. It's dedicated to our father who got us here. This is a Father's podcast Day. That, it, you know, and it's, we're launching around right Father's. Before Father's Day. It was something he wanted to see. I know he talked about it many times, to have an old-time radio show with gardening and music and guests and stories and just, you know, what
bringing
people
a community
did,
together,
yeah, and just talking. That's where, you know, things happen around a table, food, fellowship, and, you know, what's food without fellowship, what's fellowship without music, what's anything. And so we wanted to bring what happens here in our backyard to a larger audience so that you can maybe kind of feel or hear what it sounds like.
And share
here
the
in
stories.
Our backyard, yeah, in our behind, homestead sometimes.
Behind the scenes,
share the stories.
Tips and tidbits.
Disasters.
The good, bad, the ugly.
The joy, the sadness.
Sacrifice. And the challenging, and just know that, you know, small steps do have a big impact, and we hope that we can still inspire you. And
we're still growing ourselves. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're still changing and growing. It's not like we're sitting here saying, no. Oh, this is where you be.
We're
evolving. And mm-hmm. so that's going to be probably documenting our journey as well
mm-hmm.
as we move
because,
forward.
I mean, with the same with pictures and same with film, there's an ending. And but fortunately in life, sometimes part two, three,
mm-hmm.
and four.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It should never end. To mm-hmm. the thing. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, this one's dedicated to Dad. It got us this far, and had this idea to do this a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
Some sort of podcast or
mm-hmm.
radio show,
mm-hmm.
and we hope that inspires other people, and hope that we can continue
mm-hmm.
Carrying on his work.
So we believe we're a product of our dad, and he always said that you have to evolve, you have to change, and you have to grow. And that's from our grandfather, who often said to us, if you cease to learn, you cease to exist. And Dad was very big about not remaining stagnant. and just sitting on what you've done. He was always pushing us to do more, grow more, to be better versions of what we've done.
Mm-hmm. And another one he always liked to quote was, "Too much is given, much is required."
So we were given a lot.
And we try to share a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to try to share a lot.
Yeah. And sometimes it's hard because we do want, you know, people come to us and emails and tour requests and stuff. So with this platform, we hope that,
help us help you
and inspire you so that, you know, we're, you know, sometimes
we do
overwhelmed.
Want to help. We just get overwhelmed.
We just get overwhelmed. We're only now three, and so we can only do so much.
So,
and so
this will help us to help you.
Let's go down to the urban homestead, Pasadena by the freeway. Right down there on the urban homestead, Jules and his family are working away. Come on down to the farm in the city, back to the future, back to the plan. Right down there on the urban homestead, loving the life back into the land.
Oh, ooh, ooh, help the garden grow,
singing.
Oh, ooh, ooh,
we've got to help the garden grow.
The Urban Homestead theme song was written and recorded by Tom Fair. Thanks, Tom.
We've come to the end of this show.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Be sure to tune in again. Until next time,
this is Annie,
Justin,
Jordan.
Keep on growing.